Have you ever wondered what makes a good writing partner? Someone you'd want to write an entire book with. How do you know they're the one? How do two people work together to write a manuscript? And even more complicated, how do they edit it? I mean, down to the nitty-gritty, how do you know if you even want to use an Oxford comma? And when you publish, do they have to have the same agent? And if they don't, is that a new contract? And whose agent does the submission to publish? There are so many rules. How do you know exactly which rules of operations to use? Well, our guests today can help with those answers. We were so happy when they said that they would come on our podcast. So let me introduce them to you. Our first guest is a New York Times bestseller children's book author who lives in New England with her family and her dog. When she was in fourth grade, she and her neighbors saw unidentified flying objects zigzag across the sky. And she's been preparing to write a book about it ever since. Okay, we have so much to discuss about that. She's also the author of several middle grade fantasy books, including Monstrous Love and the Shadow Weaver series and a young adult duology. Her partner in crime is the acclaimed author of multiple books for kids and teens, including the Class Critter chapter books, which are so adorable, and the young adult novels, The Distance Between Lost and Found, which is an amazing book, and How It Feels to Fly. Her middle grade debut is right now, it's happening. She lives in Brooklyn, New York with her husband, daughter, and piles upon piles of books, which we can, yep, absolutely, we can all relate. She's also a freelance dance journalist, which I find I've never spoken to a freelance dance journalist before, so that's fascinating. This talented pair's new book is an MG novel entitled The 13th Circle, and it comes out on January 30th, 2024. And we can't wait to read it. Please welcome to the podcast these terrific authors, Marcy Kate Conley and Catherine Holmes. Thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, thank you for having us.
We definitely want to talk about your partnership and how you each wrote the book together, separately, edited everything. But first, maybe we can ask you a little bit how you got to become writers. What drove you to this writing career?
I didn't know when I was a kid that I wanted to be a writer. I did enjoy writing, but I didn't really think of myself as a writer. It wasn't on my list of like, I want to be a writer. I wanted to be president. I wanted to be an archaeologist. I wanted to be an opera singer. At one point, I wanted to be a farmer with who like traveled the country in a motor home and had the animals tied to the back, like everything else but a writer. But I really enjoyed writing. And when I was a kid, I actually found mostly at my parents' house one of my fourth grade writing portfolio, which is really on point and on brand for me. It had three pieces in it. One was A Girl Who Sees a UFO. One was my last will and testament, where I left my gold to my mom, my silver to my sister, neither of which I had. And my third one was a picture book called The Seal's Revenge that was about a seal who got revenge on the narwhal that killed his mate. And at the end of it, I drew the picture and the cover for it too. And like blood dripping off the narwhal's horn on the cover and with like rainbow coloring in like The Seal's Revenge, just because, I was in fourth grade. And at the end, the seal manages to kill the narwhal, and then in a surprise twist, the narwhal's mate comes up and skewers the seal at the very end. So like everybody dies. I
Your
got
Shakespearean play.
it was I actually was reading a lot of Shakespeare then. I have an older brother who's like 10 years older than me, who was in college at the time as an English literature major.
Love
So I would
it.
be like the bright little sister who like go in his room and steal his books, which was super annoying for him when he had to write papers on them. Definitely heavily influenced was my work at the time and ever since. But everybody dies is kind of on brand. Eventually, after going to college and turning into writing music. I'm a classically trained soprano. I will not be singing for you because I have very terrible stage fright. So that does not go well. But I ended up writing music and I wrote an opera in college that was a sequel to Shakespeare. And I didn't write the words, however, I still didn't think of myself as a writer. I wrote the music and I wrote the plot. I love to plot. The words were actually bits and pieces of Shakespeare's plays that I went through and took completely out of context and then kind of Frankenstein them back together according to my plot. So all the words are Shakespeare's, just not quite in the way he wrote
I love
I know, right?
that.
It was called The Undiscovered Country, and the subtitle was Quilting with Shakespeare, because that's kind of what I was doing. After graduating college, I very quickly discovered that operas are not an effective way of paying off your student loans. And ended up waitressing and eventually working in Boston for nonprofit arts organizations and got my master's degree in arts administration. And it was during that time when I was working full-time in Boston, living in New Hampshire, commuting like 4 hours a day total, spending a lot of time on trains. And one night after I was doing my master's degree in the evening, was trying to get home and was on the subway in Boston. If you've ever been on the subway of Boston, it tends to like slow down and stop at the most inconvenient times. And you just kind of chill between stations. And it's a very old subway system. So there's a lot of like old, unused subway tunnels. And I was very tired and my mind was wandering and it was stuck between tunnels. And all of a sudden, I just see at the corner of my eye, there's this old, unused subway tunnel and this plastic sheeting. And somewhere behind it, there's a light on and it's glowing in this weird way. And the gears just started turning. And I thought, ugh. There was a story about like fairies living in the unused subway tunnels of Boston. And that was like the writing bug that bit me. I got this idea and I went home and I wrote the first chapter and then the next and the next and the next. And I was just hooked and basically haven't looked back. That book did not get published. I was terrible at plotting, all kinds of tangents going everywhere, but that's what hooked me. And I
Wow.
haven't looked back since, basically.
I love that story.
I
That's so
know. Someday
Cool.
I'm going to
And such an
rewrite that book
interesting
from
idea,
scratch
too.
and publish it because I love the idea. The
Yeah.
execution was terrible.
And you know,
So.
it's like it's an idea, but you know it's true. Like, I mean, there are stuff living in
Totally. Right?
subways of Boston
Right?
for sure. So,
That's what makes it so believable because, yeah.
yeah, absolutely. And what about you, Catherine?
Yeah, so I also wrote as a kid, but the thing that is really relevant to this particular book is that in high school, I became obsessed with the X-Files, and I discovered a community of people who were writing stories about the characters. So I discovered fan fiction.
Nice.
And so in high school, I really fervently began to write and consume X-Files fan fiction. And so I would say that's where the storytelling bug really bit me, because we were posting things on these forums and getting immediate feedback and immediate response, and knowing that there were people like waiting for the next chapter of the thing that I was writing. It was kind of an immediate like, oh wow, like this is a thing that I really like. So it went beyond like, I was a good writer as a kid, I did well in school, I loved books. And then there was this turning point where I was like, oh my gosh, I love to tell stories and I love to get feedback on them and have people respond to something that I'm creating. So in college, I double majored in dance and English lit. I have been a dancer my whole life, and I did a little bit of creative writing at that time, but it was really with a double major already, I couldn't do a full creative writing concentration. It was just, I was already running myself completely ragged. And I moved to New York after college to work at a group of dance magazines. So you asked about my freelance dance writing. That was my first post-college job, was editor at some dance magazines,
Oh, cool.
writing a lot about dance. You know, when I told my parents I was going to go to college and major in dance and English lit, my dad is like, so you'll be able to entertain yourself while you're flipping burgers. So I
No.
showed him, because I went and got probably one of the few jobs that actually used both of my majors.
Nice.
So I did that for a couple of years, but I really missed fiction, because during that time I wasn't really writing anything creative. I was writing about a topic that really interested me and that I really loved, but I had kind of let the creative writing thing slip away. So I decided to go to grad school and get my master's in creative writing at the New School, and I did the concentration in writing for children, because I was interested in writing YA at the time. So yeah, I did that and kind of fell back in love with the creative process. Now, this is something that Marcy Kate and I did not discover until after we were both well into our collaboration. My first finished novel was also about a magical subway system.
Oh, it's so random. We found this out like a few months ago. Oh
Yes,
my God.
my grad school thesis, the first full-length book I finished, was about a girl who discovers that the New York City subway is alive.
Oh, that is so cool. You guys, this was like meant to be.
It
And we
was.
did not know each other at the time either. We had
That
no
book also did not get published,
clue.
like Marcy Kate's, because it was not, I had a lot to learn. I wasn't ready yet. But I just find that so funny that we found that out years into our collaboration. So it was meant to be. So yeah, I wrote that book, tried to sell it, didn't sell, then wrote The Distance Between Lost and Found, and that became my YA debut. Yeah, and then I've been dabbling kind of in different age brackets and different, done YA, done young readers, now doing middle grade, and I'm just, yeah, happier than I've been just to be creating all the time.
Oh,
Guess
that's
now we
awesome.
just have to wait for the subway fairy. Yeah,
Yes.
like that's the next collaboration, right?
Maybe, actually, maybe that's what I'll do.
That would be cool.
I'm okay with that. I will read that for sure. So then, how did you two meet each other? Because one of you is now in Boston studying and driving back and forth on the train, and One of you is in Brooklyn, so how does that all happen?
Through the Fearless 15ers. We both had our first book published the same year in 2015. Nice. So even though we had very different paths, we kind of, that's where we converged. And we were both part of this debut group. And we actually worked together on the website pretty frequently for that, on building that. So we kind of knew each other from that, and there was a lot of forums. So it was a wonderful, like, supportive environment. So we kind of knew each other already. And then a few years later, Catherine had an idea.
Yeah, so we... Like Marcy Kate said, we were debut buddies. I think our first books actually came out in the same month. Was yours February?
February 10th.
Yeah, so February 2015, we both launched our first books. So we were doing a lot of just, you know, ARC reading for each other and marketing for each other and supporting each other. And I think the first time we met in person was at a SCBWI conference. Nice. That we were both at. But yeah, in 2017, I was rewatching the whole series of The X-Files in anticipation of the new X-Files episodes that they released two new seasons a few years ago. And I had an idea. I had an idea that for a middle school X-Files about an unlikely partnership, one believes in the supernatural, one does not, and they get teamed up against their will to do a science fair project. So I had this idea. I was like, middle school X-Files, nobody's done it. I have to write this, but I didn't want to do it alone. I really felt like it was a book that needed the back and forth of two voices rather than, some writers do multiple points of view really, really well. But for this project, I felt like I wanted to dig deep into one point of view and I wanted to find someone who would dig deep into the other point of view. And so I kind of was going through my network of contacts and friends and thought about Marcy Kate and asked her, and she said immediately, yes.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, I was basically like, I've been waiting to write this book my whole life. Yes.
Oh my gosh.
I think we were both tweeting about The X-Files and how excited we were. Mm-hmm. And so I think that may have caught each other's eye. I'm like, oh, we both really like The X-Files. Cool. Yeah. It actually worked out beautifully because she invited me to write the Mulder character. And I was like, yes. Because I was like a mini Mulder when I was a kid. And she wrote the Scully character. And it worked out very well.
Mm-hmm. So how did you two, like, how did you draft the idea before you started writing, or did you kind of just pants it?
We did not pants it.
No, we plotted.
So yeah, here's a fun fact is we both also became moms in 2017. Okay. So when this collaboration started, we were both very, very tired parents of newborns.
Oh, yeah.
So I think we had one initial, back then it wasn't even Zoom, Skype maybe?
Yeah, I think it was Skype, yeah.
To like talk through the idea and the possibilities and what we would want to do. And then Marcy Kate introduced me to this amazing thing called a beat sheet.
Yes. Mm. Save the Cat Beat Sheets by Blake Snyder. Yes. They're amazing. What I mentioned before, I was terrible with plotting with that first book. That was true for my first few books until like my third or fourth. And then I discovered these and it was like life-changing. Mm. I was like, oh, here's what I've been missing. And here's how I actually stay on track. And so we incorporated that. It has the 15 beats of the story. And some people might find it restricting. I find it very helpful just to like organize my thoughts. And we use that as like a guidepost. And of course, you know, as we end up drafting, things change. The plot changed. We flesh things out more and our characters decide to do surprising things. So you replot and you figure out what the ramifications of that are. It's definitely a living, breathing document, not a set in stone type thing, which I think a lot of people who are pantsers aren't thinking of plotting might be afraid of. Definitely a flexible thing, but it was very helpful. So we collaborate on that and brainstorm what it could be and we put into the document and use that as the basis. We also use Scrivener also, and I discovered that was life-changing. Those are like my two favorite tools, Scrivener and Beat Sheets. And we put it in that and Catherine, I think, actually did a lot of the figuring out where the chapters should fall and where the back and forth should be, which was really helpful. Some of that, of course, also ended up changing. There's a couple of chapters where we end up flipping the point of view. But for the most part, we actually got them pretty well with the right person taking it.
Yeah, so we had the beat sheet and we had our document with our kind of chapters back and forth. And we'd thought a little bit about like the major points in the story should be from which character's point of view. Although like Marcy Kate said, that did end up changing several times in the story. And then we kind of just went back and forth. And I wrote my chapter and then she read that and worked on her chapter. And then I read that and worked on my next chapter. But because we also had the beat sheet, if one of us got ahead or behind, we could like, I wasn't forever waiting for her to catch up or she wasn't forever waiting for me to catch up because we also kind of knew like, oh, I do need to jump ahead and write this chapter from her. My character's point of view. My character, Danny, is, as Marcy Kate said, the Scully of the book. She is a seventh grade aspiring scientist who does not believe in anything she cannot explain. And she is very irritated with being partnered with the school weirdo for the science fair project. So yeah, we were able, it was mostly back and forth and trading, but because we had our roadmap, mm-hmm. we could work independently a little bit and then go back and tweak things as we needed.
That would be helpful because life sometimes gets in the way, and rather than just stopping and having to wait for the other person to catch up, you can still keep going with the story.
Yeah. I mean, and as I said, we both had new kids. So mm-hmm. we were both in that, you know, new parent mode. And then both of us had, at various points in the process, other books under contract. I mean, when we started, Marcy Kate had several books under contract when she agreed to even do the collaboration. So those deadlines would take precedence over drafting something brand new. And then I sold this series part the way through. So then I had those under contract. So it allowed us to work in other areas and then also come back to this book.
So this brings up what I first mentioned at the beginning. How do you announce to your agent that you're going to be working in a collaboration with somebody who's agented at not just with a different agent, but a different agency? And how does that all fit in? Like, how does that work?
I think we mentioned the project to our agents at different times. I think I kind of gave my agent a little heads up that, hey, I have this like collaboration that's sort of like not the front burner project right now, but something we're like playing around with and you might see it in a couple of years. Because, you know, I worked. So I kind of gave her the heads up that this is like on my list of things that are, you know, being written right now. But by the time we, you know, actually had a draft, we sent it to both the agents and, you know, ended up, they both read and gave us feedback. We ended up also, they drafted a collaboration agreement, which sounds awfully formal, but it's actually very helpful to have just like the expectations clear and everything laid out, you know, like if there's expenses for marketing when you sell this, like how is that broken up and who does what? It just kind of keeps the expectations really clear, make sure everybody's on the same page to have that. So that was also very helpful as well. But it was more of just like, hey, we got this book. Hope you guys love it. What do you think?
And both agents could tell, I think, from the earliest mentions that we were both super passionate. Yes. About this project. It did take a long time we had our first discussion of it in 2017 and it's coming out in 2024.
So they sent it to like 2020, I think, maybe the first time we sent a draft. Mm-hmm. I feel like.
Yeah, but it wasn't their first knowledge of it. They knew. They right. were like, they both have this project they're very excited about. It's going to come down the pike at some point.
I love that that you didn't have to rush through it, that you yeah. still were able to do your other projects and that, you know, that it really was a labor of love. It sounds like. Yeah,
it was. It was very much like the fun project we got to do in between things. And that was really nice to have like this fun thing you're excited to write when other stuff is done. It's kind of like almost like a reward to do more work.
And not that our other projects aren't fun, but like, exactly. But yeah, it's like always, well, and speaking of 2020, like something that was a joy to work on in a very difficult time.
Definitely.
This project.
And 2020, so that means you had young children in the house too while you were doing that. So yeah, that's interesting, yes. Right? Yeah.
It was actually kind of nice that we both were in a very similar position because I think Catherine's child is only like 3 months mm-hmm. ahead of mine. So we were very much in the same position when like random child things come up.
That's right.
It's like, sorry, something's going on with the kids. Gotta like put everything on the back burner. And I think we both were very empathetic to each other being in that position, which if mm-hmm. one of us had not had children, might have been like possibly annoying, but both totally understand what the other's going through. So
how did you edit the book? Did you like what one person edit the other person's chapter, or did you just edit your own chapter? Like, but yeah, how did you work out the editing process for that?
We both went over the whole everybody's chapter, so okay. It was almost like getting like two editors to go through it, which was mm-hmm. and we left comments for each other, kind of back and forth about like, hey, what do you think of this? Or I tweaked this here. How's this working? Or do we need more of this? We also did a lot of, you know, because we have, you know, our characters talking in the other person's chapters and they say, oh, you know, what do you think of, you know, Kat's reaction here? Does that work for you? Or do you want to tweak that? So there was definitely some specific comments where you wanted like very particular input on things about behaviors and reactions and stuff like that, which was very helpful as well. But it was mostly a lot of just going back and forth, looking at the chapters and just talking through things. We had a lot of emails that like mm-hmm. eventually ran out of room. So Gmail just was like, no, you're done. Had to start a new thread. So this is a lot of emails back and forth talking through things. And we had, you know, multiple meetings on Skype mm-hmm. to chat through any issues that were sticky.
One thing that was really cool was that it started out very much as my chapters and her chapters and my character and her character. And then the more revision passes we did, the more it felt like our mm-hmm. chapters and our book. Like I would know more easily what her character Kat would say in an interaction or in my chapters and vice versa. And I would feel much more comfortable, you know, at the at the beginning of the collaboration, we're both treading very carefully. Like, I don't want to step on her toes. I wouldn't edit something in her section. I would leave a long comment off to the side about with questions and vice versa, because, you know, it's a new collaboration. And then by the time we're working with an editor, by our last revision pass, I felt very comfortable kind of going in and being like, I just tweaked this paragraph, you know, let me know if that's okay. And vice versa. Like we still have ownership over the character that is our character, but it's now very much our book.
Catherine, you just gave me shivers. That was really cool. Like, I love hearing that. You know, like, as two people, two writers, we all know how hard and how much we care. Like, it's our babies, right? Like, I mean, even if it's just a chapter, that's things that are coming out of our minds. So to hear you say that it's like all of a sudden it became yours, you know, like both of yours together, like, oh, shivers. I want to read this book so bad now.
I know, I do too.
It's been so much fun to write. Yeah. And I think that was one of the thing that made it just, we were friends beforehand, and, you know, we just, we clicked together well for this book and just as people. I mean, some collaborations could easily go astray if you have two personalities butting heads, but we definitely, like, no, did not do that. We're very respectful of each other's character, like she was saying, and it made it really work well and became ours, which is, you know. Yeah. Exciting.
So when you went out on submission, like, which agent decided, did both agents submit the books, or did they collaborate together on how they were going to submit the books?
They collaborated. Yeah. And I think they each, like, I think they divided and conquer, if I'm not mistaken, but they collaborated.
And the more you talk, the more it feels like this was meant, like, this collaboration was just meant to be. Like, you both had babies at the same time. You were both on the same page. You both agreed the way you were writing it, even on the storyline. I'm just really curious about the fourth grade seeing zigzags in the sky versus the cape.
Me too.
Do you mind talking about that?
I would love to. So ever since I was a little kid, I have always been fascinated by, like, the weird and supernatural. And it was around third and fourth grade where I had, like, particular obsession with UFOs, and my dad got me this, like, pair of binoculars, and I would, like, wear them to school around my neck. Like, I was never a popular child, and it just got worse in LA elementary school and further on. But fourth grade was probably the part where I really started being the weirdo, and I would just, like, look at the sky, and I was very weird, but that's fine. It was fun, and it was fascinated by it, and I was kind of obsessed with aliens. And my next door neighbor and I were good friends, and her little sister was always hanging out with us. And it was one day, it was in the fall, and we're in her backyard, and it wasn't nighttime, but it was, like, dusk. So it was probably, like, overish. So it was starting to get a little darker earlier. And they were about to call us in for dinner, but they hadn't yet. And we're in her backyard. We see this light in the sky, and it's hovering there. And then all of a sudden it just goes like this, and then this, and then this, and just gone. And we're like, oh my God. I just remember the three of us running toward the house screaming, be like, oh my God. And I don't even know if my neighbor remembers this or not. but to me, it was like this formative moment, like, oh my God, planes and helicopters do not move at right angles like that. You know, our parents were like, well, you know, we did live right near an airport. Mm-hmm. It was Moore Airfield in Nashua, New Hampshire. And that was, like, not far at all, like, literally, like, half a mile away at best from their backyard. But still, planes like that don't do that. And this is, like, late 80s, and, like, that's, they don't do that. It was weird. So, but there's also, like, sorry, I'm going to start talking about UFOs now. You're getting me.
It's fine.
So,
some point.
There's a lot of, like, you know, incidents of UFOs being very interested around airports and around Navy installations and other military installations. And they happen to be there, not necessarily because they are, you know, United States planes or foreign enemy planes or whatever. There's an interest in that. And I don't know if it's like, I personally feel like it would be very unlikely that we are alone in the universe. And, like, I think most scientists would also agree with that, whether or not they actually come here, definitely a point of debate. But the idea that we are, like, alone in the universe is just kind of preposterous and highly unlikely.
Right.
So I personally think it's definitely possible. So, but there's some weird things that happen. But they're very interested in these things. So I don't think it's a far reach to think maybe they were at this weird little airport in New Hampshire. It's a dinky little airport, but who knows? So that was a formative moment for me. It was just burned into my memory of this light, just this weird circular light, just making this weird zigzag. And it was too high up to be like a firefly or anything like that. And it was definitely not an aircraft.
I love it because it actually put you in the right frame of mind to end up where you are right now, writing
I
this
know.
book, collaborating. It's perfect. It's perfect. And
And the most annoying thing was I was primed and ready, and that was like the one day I didn't have my binoculars.
Oh no.
So like, I was like, no.
Always like that.
That's so cute. But
thank you for sharing, because I think I have to agree with you. With the billions and billions of stars out there, there has to be. I would actually feel very sad if we were the only living beings anywhere in this whole universe. That would be very sad. So
it just seems so unlikely. I mean, like, because we don't know how big the universe. It could be
exactly.
And it's kind of almost impossible to think about how it wouldn't be infinite. Like, it just
it's a concept that we can't.
We literally cannot wrap our heads around.
No.
And like the odds of like nothing else being intelligent out there, very strange. But there's there's so many instances of like Navy pilots who are seeing these. I mean, I don't know if you Google the Tic Tac video.
Right.
And you'll see all these crazy things. They're like,
it's so true.
Navy fighter pilots who have seen these crazy things happening and like disappearing into the ocean. Or disappearing into the, it's bizarre, and we have no earthly explanation for it.
I agree.
Totally. That's so fun. Yeah. I mean, I totally believe in it, you know, because I mean, I saw a UFO when I was going to Mexico once. So like,
it's so cool. I want to hear about your story.
I never heard about this story, Angie.
I'll share.
College, and I went down to Mexico, and we were coming back, and we were in the middle of the desert somewhere. I don't even know where we were. It was like dark, and I look off to the side, and there's something that was in the field next to us, and it rises up, and it's kind of like in a triangle shape, and it had like lights. So I was thinking, because I lived on that military base, you know, so I was thinking it was some sort of plane, but it rose up, and then it kind of like went over our car, and it was like above our car, and then it just shot off down the freeway. And so it was just, and we're going like maybe 80 miles an hour because I'm back from Mexico. So. And it just like shot off and just vanished. Like, it was so fast. And
wow.
I think there was one other person in the car who saw it, but everyone else was asleep. And so I'm like, okay, am I hallucinating? Was that real? You know, it's like in the middle of the night, but I can't explain what it is. So to me, it was an unidentified flying object. It was some sort of, I think it was a UFO personally, but
that's amazing.
I think it was aliens. So.
Okay, Catherine, do you have a story like that?
Hey, no, I've never seen a UFO. Never. I mean, I feel like it's pretty obvious now why I wrote the Scully and Marcy King wrote the Mulder. But I will say, like, you know, the motto of the X-Files was, I want to believe. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like I want there to be more to the universe, to the earth, to, you know, to everything than what we can see and perceive. I would like there to be more.
I completely agree. I hope.
Feels like it
you can
be.
Only hope. Mm-hmm. But thank you so much for sharing that. Oh, the one last thing that I wanted to ask you about your collaboration is how, like, did you ever like actually sit down, meet and, you know, like edit the book together? Or was it always by Gmail or Google Docs or whatever you were using?
Yeah, I think it was entirely just virtual. I mean, we met in person once for like coffee in New York, but that was like just like outside and just chatting. And then at SCBDWI New England earlier this year. I don't think the other time.
I don't think so, because it was between having kids and not living COVID. In the same city, and then COVID. I think pretty much all the work was done virtually.
Yeah.
Technology is amazing.
I absolutely love it.
I was going to say, this is my second collaboration with an author, actually. I did one previously with Dan Herring for the Star Shepherd, and he lives in Utah. So we were on opposite side of the country. So that was also just totally virtual. We didn't even meet until after the book was published. So it can be done, and it can be done well and fruitful way.
No, I absolutely love it, because it does mean that you can meet with somebody like Angie lives in California. I live in New Jersey, and you know, like, we collaborate all the time. It's great. Technology is fantastic. When it works,
we've never met in person either. Like, we've known each other since our AQC days. And
I know.
Right? Like, we've just
in 12 years, we've never met in person.
Wow. Say if we sell more books in this series, we would like to go on a writing retreat together.
Yes. Oh, we've been saying that
for that would be that's the like if that happens.
That's a reward.
Okay,
yeah.
So now you have to decide for the writing retreat, because it will happen, right? We're gonna put that in the universe. It will
we
happen.
Would love to be a series. So.
Right. Yeah. So would it be mountains, ocean, or like you have to try and collaborate
you're
on where you're gonna go?
Highlights Foundation, which I'm not sure where that falls.
It's Poconos. It's mountains.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. Excellent.
We can walk in the woods and look for cryptids.
Yes.
Or look up at the stars and look for UFOs at the same time. Yeah. It's all good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I just want to ask you each one question that I love to ask writers is, what's the one thing that you think you did that helped you the most in your career? Like if you were to be talking to a new writer and they were at a loss for what to do, like what would you say was the one thing that was important?
I think learning to take feedback and learning to take criticism, because, and maybe it's because I started out really becoming serious about writing on a forum and writing fan fiction and getting kind of immediate feedback, even though they weren't editing me. But I think you can see the writers who, it's not even about developing a thick skin, but just like who understand the value of other people's feedback and how having more voices to a point can make something better. Like the thing that I put out into the world by myself in my room is not this like sacrosanct perfect thing, but that other people's voices can improve it. And so I think sometimes brand new writers have a hard time like letting other people comment and then seeing the value in those comments.
I agree.
Yeah, I totally agree. That's definitely one of the most important things to do. Kind of piggybacking on that, learning to develop a thick skin and how to handle rejection is also really important. My first book was the seventh book I wrote, and I queried several books before that and got like hundreds upon hundreds of rejection, which was brutal. And by the time I wrote the first book that got published, I was kind of at a place of like, why am I doing this to myself? This is terrible and crushing. But eventually had to like figure out how to manage that internally and not take it personally. And it's really hard to do that because I think I mentioned earlier, your books are like your babies.
Yeah.
And you love them. You're kind of like bleeding onto the page. And if somebody doesn't like it, that's, you know, doesn't feel good. But yeah, as writers and authors, you get rejection at every single stage of the process. And it doesn't matter if you've been, you know, published one book or 20, like you're going to get rejected either by your agent not thinking you can take it out, or a publisher not wanting to publish it anymore, or, you know, people just rejecting it across the board when you go on a submission with a new work. And then, you know, trade reviews, they might not like your book, and readers aren't always going to like your book. And there's at every stage, you're going to get rejected in some way, shape or form. And you have to figure out how to deal with that, because if you don't, it's going to just tear you up. And sometimes you see that when authors spontaneously combust online, which is not great. And you have to figure out how to deal with rejection. And that was really hard, but eventually kind of I figured it out. And like, I don't normally recommend this, but like, I read my Goodreads reviews because I'm curious. Even if I get like a terrible scathing review, I'm like, okay, it wasn't for that person. Move on to the next. And I figured that out. I don't recommend that for most people. I'm kind of weird in that way. Mm-hmm. But that I think was probably like the best thing for me as a person and a writer, was figuring out how to do that. It was a process. It did not come easily. That and also adopting Scrivener and Beat Sheets did the best thing for my writing, because that I needed those desperately in order to get my crazy brain to just not be dumping all over the page and in some sort of organized manner. So those are, I think, the two biggies for me.
As a huge Save the Cat fan, I completely agree with you.
Right. It was literally life-changing. It's not underestimating to say that.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your story, for sharing your book, which I cannot wait for now, because now that I've read this, I've heard the story behind it, right, Angie? Like, I am like, I want to read this book so bad. But we are going to shift gears a little bit and get to know you personally a little bit better. So I'm going to ask 10 quick fire questions. And if you both want to answer, that's fine. If one of you wants to answer more than the other, it's all good. And these can be really short answers, yes, no, one word, whatever. It's completely up to you. I'm asking the questions and you go for it. If you were asked to move to the Mars colony tomorrow, would you go?
No.
No.
No way.
No.
Tomorrow? I like oxygen.
No. I'm expecting yes, but okay. Nope. Do you consider yourselves world travelers or homebodies?
Homebodies. I am terrified of flying. Mm-hmm. I do it when I need to, but it terrifies me.
I love to travel, but I also really, I like being at home. I like being cozy. So both. I guess, would that make me a hobbit? Like I'm Bilbo. Come out into the world and then come back.
I'm okay with that too. Their houses are absolutely beautiful. Mm-hmm.
I'd love a hobbit.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Me too. If you were seeing a Broadway show, is it a play or a musical?
Musical.
You guys. Like, I mean, I almost feel like you're sharing a brain right now. What is your favorite activity on a day off?
Read, take a walk, get a mani-pedi.
Probably writing, because that's what I do on my days off from my actual day job. So I'm kind of a workaholic in one way, shape, or form.
It's all good. It's all, as long as you are happy while you're doing it, then that's all that matters. If you could instantly speak another language, which one would it be?
French.
It would be whatever the language is that's in the Voynich manuscript that people don't know what it is. I would love to know what that is. Sorry, that's been on my brain a lot lately. I'm writing.
I love that. Love, love, love where your brain is going with that. That's awesome.
So cool.
right? What is your go-to comfort food?
Chocolate.
Probably coffee.
Coffee and chocolate is caffeinated, you guys. Perfect. It's all good. You can tell that you guys are writers. It's all good. Have you ever waved back to someone before realizing that they weren't waving to you?
Oh yes. Yep. Super awkward.
Absolutely.
I know. It just happened to me the other day and I was like, oh, so sorry.
And then you look like past them, like, oh no, it was the person.
I'm actually waving to the guy behind you again. That's it. Would you rather play the hero or the villain in a movie?
The hero.
Probably the hero too. It depends on what the villain is like, but probably the hero.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how likely are you to pick the wrong line at the supermarket?
Oh, 99% of the time.
I was going to say a solid 8.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm not allowed to pick the line when I go shopping with my husband. It's as simple as that. So, and the last question, which is really intellectual, so get ready. Do you sing in the shower?
Sometimes.
I don't, but only because the wall of the shower is directly next to the wall of my kid's bedroom and everything is right next to it.
Oh, sure.
Yeah,
that was the reason. Thank you so much, both of you, for answering those questions. I really appreciate it.
That was fun. Can you tell everyone what you're working on now?
Sure. I'm working on a bunch of different things. I'm working on a new middle grade project that's a fantasy novel. It's not yet, none of these are, I have nothing under contract right now, so it's just a draft. That's based on the Green Children of Woolpit tale. I'm working on a picture book that is inspired by Edgar Allan Poe's cat, Catalina. Oh. And I'm working on two different YA novels. One that's about a hero turned villain who has all the darkness in the world inside of her. And another that is about a world with assassin librarians and dragon archaeology, which is where the Voynich manuscript comes in, mysterious book. So a bunch of different things in progress right now. Hopefully one of them will go out on sub soon and something will sell.
Oh my gosh.
That's wonderful.
Okay. She amazes me. She always has so many things.
I don't sleep. It's kind of a problem, but.
You know. Catherine, what about you? What are you working on now?
This year and going into next year, I have been working on a Write for Hire middle grade series, which I believe finally is going to be kind of announced and marketed pretty soon. Yay. So I have some more middle grade on the horizon, but working with in partnership with someone else. And then I, on my own, have a draft of a middle grade standalone that I have been working on and tinkering with for a long time that I feel really good about. So hopefully that'll go to my agent pretty soon.
Yay. Fantastic. And then the collaboration that you two are doing about the subway fairies, right, is also on the list, right?
Yeah. Well, we have been working on a proposal for a sequel to Circle. So, nice. But that's kind of pending for a while because they in the contract aren't going to look at it until basically our first book is published. So,
okay.
Fingers cross your fingers for us. Buy the book. The better the sales are, the more likely there'll be a sequel. So.
Beautiful. Wonderful.
And so how can they find the two of you on the internet?
Google Marcy Kate, you'll bring me up because I'm like, it's like the Highlander. There can be only one. So if you can spell my name, you can find me. If you can't, you may find the Mary Kate Olsen instead. But it's MarcyKate, but it's MarcyKate.com is my website. And I have social media links from there.
There are a lot of Catherine Holmeses in the world. Unlike Marcy Kate, I am not the Highlander. But yeah, it's Catherine, KATHRYN, Holmes, HOLMES.com. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Threads as Catherine Holmes in all those places.
The X-Files meet Scooby-Doo in the 13th Circle, a middle grade mystery from Marcy K. Connolly and Catherine Holmes, featuring two unexpected friends, crop circles, science fairs, and Men in Black, perfect for both the highly scientific and cryptid enthusiast alike. Cat knows aliens are real, and she's determined to prove it. By studying the Western farm circles, her town's legendary crop circle phenomenon, she'll not only demonstrate the existence of extraterrestrial life, but also win the grand prize in the McMurray U Science Competition, a feat she sure will impress her distant NASA scientist father. Danny most certainly does not believe in aliens. How can she when they go against every scientific principle she's been taught? So when Danny is paired with Kat to enter the McMurray U Science Competition, which she has to win to avoid going to her parents' artsy summer camp, she knows she's at a disadvantage. Her solution? Disprove Kat's theory, of course, without telling her partner her true intentions. But as the girls bond over science, it becomes clear that there is something strange about the Western farm circles, and when Danny and Kat's project is threatened by suspicious forces, they'll have to work together to expose the truth once and for all.
Their book came out on January 30th, and they're giving away a free copy of their book, so please look in the description box and join the giveaway to win a copy of The 13th Circle, which looks, oh, and sounds amazing. I'm so excited for this book. And then if you enjoy these videos, please like and subscribe to our channel and hit the notification bell so that you can be notified of any future videos from us. And we just want to thank you both for joining us today. We had so much fun with the two of you, and oh my gosh, I was so excited.
I know.
This was so fun.
And congratulations again on your success. And we wish you many, many, many sequels to this book.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.